We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Sam, listeners, Light Years Podcast, do you ever feel like you're always on? What do you do when you need a moment to chill? How do you like to hit the reset button to get ready for what's next? There's only one beer out there that's literally made to chill, and that's Coors Light. The mountains on the bottles and cans even turn blue when your beer is cold. Wow, that's amazing. That way you always know when it's time to chill. When you need to hit reset, just open up a Coors Light. It's mountain cold refreshment and made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado. And as always, celebrate.
Was that the best Warriors win of the season?
We recorded before the game. Not really a preview, but some overall thoughts about the season. And then they go out and they do that, Sam. That's what we deserve, by the way, is what we deserve.
I know. You guys are going to laugh so hard because what we recorded. So we're trying to not stay up till 1 a.m. recording every night. So we wanted to talk about the Steve Kerr quotes on like how he would change the starting lineup. And it just will sound so funny after you watch the Spurs game.
I think some of it will stand. But we're recording this after the game now, and that was the best game of the season, and that was the game to me that the Warriors looked like Steve Kerr's team. That team looked to me like that was peak Steph, Draymond, and then Steve Kerr, like just perfect, right? Like that's why this team became a dynasty.
Yeah, I mean, they from opening tip, they looked like they had added energy. They're playing faster than the other team. And when sometimes people think faster just means athleticism or speed. To me, faster with the Warriors is mental. It's always like ping, ping, passing. Yep. And, you know, they just looked like they looked like the old Warriors or anything. I don't know. Maybe it was inauguration day, a little added spice, got to wear the Forever Warrior jerseys. You know how much that means to Steph. I refuse to believe that wasn't part of the reason, but I mean, they look great, and they kind of, it makes all sorts of like, what are they doing? Criticisms look funny when they play like this. Like at some point they're going to hit a block and not look like this, but it's just fun to watch when they happen.
I think they haven't looked like this all season, right? So I think they're going to hit a block, maybe
the Kings game, but yeah.
Yeah, the Kings game was great, but it felt like when, you know, Kevon Looney's mostly always making the right play, but when I see Andrew Wiggins make that pass to Wiseman, when I see, you know, Kelly Oubre make the right pass, when I see Draymond Green or Steph actually throwing an alley-oop to Wiseman and Draymond making the alley-oop to Wiseman instead of doing like a weird wraparound bounce pass that Wiseman can't catch. Like when I'm seeing them make these like final pass plays to these guys, it felt like Steve Kerr was jerking off in the locker room after this. Like there's no doubt. Like this is what he envisioned that team could do. Part of it was that the Spurs couldn't shoot today though, Sam. Like part of that, like let's be clear, like they were 4 for 33 from three. It didn't feel like...
They hit a fourth one. I was going to say they're 3 for 32. I forgot about that. I mean, you got love when you get garbage time. You forget about
that. That was part of it, right? But But beyond that, like, this team is, dare we say that they're starting to get how to play Warriors basketball? Do we start to say that? Because you look at the schedule, it's perfect now for this team to start to continue playing this way, because they start to see the Knicks tomorrow. They start to see the Timberwolves, right? They get some good tests and stuff like that. But yeah, this is a good start to what seems to be a good stretch of games.
I mean, that's another conversation. They got to take these games that are gimmies and stack up wins, because at some point at midseason, something weird's going to happen. Steph might have to sit a game. Draymond may sit a game, and you'll probably throw away a game that you don't want COVID. To. So
yeah,
exactly. So they need to rack those wins up. But to me, I want to pull this back. Everything tonight starts with Steph and Draymond. Draymond had, I want to say, 7 points in the first quarter. And it's not that I think Draymond's going to be a big time scorer, because that's just not who he is anymore. But like, hits a three.
Yes.
The play that really cemented it for me was when Steph set a screen for him in the half court. 2015-16, Draymond takes that to the rack. The Draymond we saw the last couple of years kind of dwells on the ball and waits for someone else to get open to get the pass. Tonight, he's like, Steph sets a screen. Two defenders go with Steph, because obviously they do. And he's immediately like, open lane, layup right there. And those are the little things that, you know, maybe we haven't seen from Draymond as much over the years. But like, when the Warriors are doing that, when Steph is popping around the court with a little added emphasis, everything else will fall into line. Like, yes, everyone was making the extra passes tonight, but it really does start and end with Steph and Draymond.
Yep. A lot of the first 5 minutes, Andrew Bogut had a great quote, friend of the show. Not really. He blocked me. But I think I called him MAGA or something.
Relax.
But he made a great point that Steph plays his way, because he knows that if everyone, like, this is the forever argument that Warriors fans, me, you, everyone else on the timeline, everyone in existence is always going to say, should Steph be aggressive? Should he play off the ball? Should he find a right balance? What should he do? Sammy comes out here today, and I don't think he shot the ball for the first 4 minutes.
Like, no, I think he set a record for screens set by a point guard in the first 5 minutes of the game. Like, it was hilarious, because I was like, he was incredibly aggressive running from player to player.
Yes!
Screening.
Yes.
Like, it was like so fast. Like, it's the type of thing that coaches would be like, if you could show more urgency setting a screen like Steph did here, we could win, you know, like,
you know, our MVP is setting screens. Yeah.
Everyone's heard that one in like some sort of JV league in high school at some point, you know? So,
it's like when Kobe used to make it a point to only pass, you know, in the first half, because guys would be like, he's a ball hogger. Steph is like, he's making it a point to be like, you know what? I'm going to win. We're going to win. We're going to play well. And I'm going to back screen. And, you know, he got his shots, right? He got his shots up. He scores 10 points in a few minutes. It's what he does. And that's the point that Bogut made, is he does what he does. He gets his guys involved, relaxes the defense a little bit, and then he goes on his little spree. He goes on a flurry, and then it's over, right? And the game was essentially kind of over by the first quarter. You can see where this was headed. And I think that's who Steph Curry is, right? Like, that's what makes him the best. Like, he is not peak prime Steph Curry, because he's holding the ball all day and dribbling and shooting. He had 20 points at halftime, Sam. So he's on pace for 40 points, despite the fact that if he shot the ball every possession, you probably could have had 30 in the first half, right? But that's not how it works.
Yeah, and that's kind of the deal with Steph. Everyone these days is just trying to kind of like get my numbers first and then figure it out later. And Steph he plays the game honestly. And it's you know, when you do that, you're going to have games where, like, why does he not just take over? What is he doing setting all these screens? But then you have nights like this where you're like, he had 26 or 27, but it felt like he could have had 50 if he wanted to. But it doesn't matter, because they were up 20 based on everything he did the whole time. So all that's positive.
One more thing about Steph. Yeah. Some incredible passing tonight from him, especially to the corner. He had 4 turnovers, because he always pulls those dumbass passes. He had 2 where he's just, honestly, I don't know what he's doing. I think he just like mind lapses when he like just ends up in like another universe for like a split second. So he just throws a dumb pass, man. But some of the stuff, Sam, where he splits the double, or he does, like, he's doing a lot of set a screen. Someone sets a screen on the left side. He fakes to the left, goes back to the right, gets by the guy. Right. But he is finding guys right now in the corners, kind of like James Harden and LeBron. Like some of those passes, except the difference is he's 6'3" and he can't see over those trees like someone like LeBron does, right? So he's making some of those cross court passes. He had one where it was to Wiggins from one side of the court all the way to the other, where he's just like looping it with one hand, classic Steph fashion. Yeah, man, some of the passes that he's throwing out there, really, I think he hasn't done since like his first couple seasons in the NBA when he was the primary ball handler. And since then, you know, we've seen the Jarrett Jacks and the Andre Iguodalas and players like that really put him off. And I do think
it's just a reminder that, you know, what he had to sacrifice to play with better players, because Steph's a good passer. He is. Like, is he a better passer than LeBron James? No. But like, that doesn't mean he's not an excellent passer. But like, with passing, there's a level of rhythm. And yeah, when you're playing off ball because you're trying to accommodate four players who can't play off ball, your passes are going to ebb and flow. As we're seeing now, when he gets to touch the ball a little more often, he finds a rhythm. You get less dumb passes. Like, he's always going to throw turnovers, but yeah, there's a crispness to his passing that comes with rhythm. And he's the ultimate rhythm player. Like, I don't think people really give enough credence to the fact, like, yeah, let him play in a certain role. He'll figure it out and he'll be very effective at it over time. Like, the off-ball thing is not because he's not capable of playing on ball. The off-ball thing is because no one else is capable of being that effective off-ball as him. Like, he's very unique in that sense, where it's almost a waste to not use it as a weapon, because you can find dudes who can run a pick and roll. You can't find dudes who can set two screens, catch the ball, and either hit it or do a second pick and roll out of it as effectively as if they just dribbled the ball at the top of the key. That's always kind of the conundrum with him. And that's kind of why he, you know, probably is the most skilled player in the league. If not, you know, maybe it's KD and he's the second most skilled, but like, end of the day, like, he can do more things than anyone in terms of just variety of ways he can use them. It's like a wide receiver who has just a route tree with like 8 billion routes, where you're just like, I don't even know what to run for them, as opposed to like, I don't know, like someone like Randy Moss, where you're like, well, we're just gonna run a fade every time because that's what he's amazing at.
Yeah, and the off-ball stuff I thought was a great point, because Steph is the greatest off-ball player, and you can compare him to a J.J. Redick or even like a Klay Thompson, but the difference is that when he's off the ball and he gets the ball, he's not just shooting the ball. Like, he can get the ball, and then he can drive, split the double, draw a foul, get to the hole, create a shot. And that's stuff that you don't see, like you're saying. I think KD's probably the closest guy, because KD can play off the ball too.
Right.
But Steph is on another level because he's grown up playing that way. He's always been that type of guy. And the offense is catered to that type of style. And I think it's even more fun when you see Kelly Oubre and Andrew Wiggins out there involved. And tonight, I don't know where you want to go with this next, but tonight, James Wiseman breakout game, like 20
points.
Yeah,
I was going to ask, do you want to go Wiseman or Oubre next? So yeah, let's do Wiseman. It's funny because I want to see Wiseman shoot threes, but you know, we'll get to that later in the pod. It was good to see Wiseman just excel at the basics tonight, which is finish everything inside. Honestly, like, I mean, you know, we can talk about how the Spurs defense was terrible tonight, but it's a starting point for Wiseman. Anyone who cut to the rim, if he was hanging around on the block there, and you know, even a little farther out than the block, to be honest, because it feels like he's on the block at all times, because he's massive. Like, he could be at the elbow and it's like, well, it's just one stride to get to the block for him, right? And he was super effective at that. And on top of that, I was almost more impressed with his awareness with the passing.
Yeah, the one to Drake. He had three assists to start. The
four,
one to
four.
Oh, he had four total tonight. Yeah. Three in the first half. I thought they put him in a better position. I thought that was a lot of it. They did a lot of Draymond at the top. Steph was off ball, but they also got Steph the ball on the wing a little bit, where he's coming off a screen. So it's not really, Sam, like a high pick and roll, I guess, but it kind of is. Like, they're getting him in a way that makes sense, where it's kind of a dribble handoff with a screen. And then when it's just Wiseman sitting there, right, on the low block when Steph is driving or Draymond's driving, then it's easy money. It's so easy what he has to do right now in this type of offense. And like, whatever, so the defense was bad, but you're not gonna play Anthony Davis and Nikola Jokic every game. guess what? Like, there's 28 other teams in the NBA, right? You're going to play the LaMarcus Aldridges or the Spurs. You're going to play the Knicks coming up. You're going to play the Wolves. So it was good to see those. It wasn't even flashes. I think he overall had a very, very good game.
No, he had an excellent game. I mean, it's I would take this from him every night this year. Like, you're hoping for more long term, but like in general, if he's just dominating the paint in terms of finishing everything and rebounding, and honestly, he wasn't terrible on defense tonight. I think, I mean, he had some rookie mistakes, but he defended DeMar DeRozan a couple times on drives before DeRozan left the game. And it was better than what we saw a week ago. And it's all the stuff, like, I mean, I really do want to just see him, you know, like be allowed to shoot more threes and a little more, but like, honestly, I'll take what I can get in terms of his development at this point. Right.
Yeah. The rebounding is big. The rebounding, he didn't have a double double tonight. He had 6 rebounds and just 1 offensive rebound. But I think that's another part of the game that I don't think Warriors fans have ever seen. I've never seen it where you have a big man who's going to offensive rebound and finish. Like, there's no guy that's ever done it in my existence as a Warriors fan. I can't think of anyone.
Hey, Bedrins, baby.
Yeah. Bedrins, maybe the closest guy. But, like, Wiseman had 1 offensive rebound where he just ripped it in a group of 2 other Spurs and just throws it back down, right? And, like, he did that once. That's a flash. But, like, that's something that, like, that can take over games. Like, when look at the Warriors, they've played against some of these teams that have guys that do that. Anthony Davis literally did that all game. Like, just easy buckets. 10 points is 10 points, Sam. If you get 5 putback layups, that's 10 points. That's the same thing as 5 mid-range jumpers.
And some nights you're not going to face a team where it's this easy. Some nights you need to take every easy point you can.
Yep.
Right?
Yep.
All right.
By the way, if we're going to Kelly Oubre next, it's really funny box score stat that he's +1. He's playing with the bench, so it does make sense. The bench was a little worse tonight, but I thought that was funny.
Isn't that the funniest part? Like, the Warriors had the worst net rating of starters in the NBA entering tonight's game. So that was kind of what spurred our conversation about how the starting lineup doesn't work, which we're going to get to later. And tonight the starters looked amazing together, and they're still going to have the worst starting plus minus of anyone, because it's going to take them like 5 games of playing like this to work out of that big of a black hole statistically. But it was kind of, you know, a little bit of validation for Steve Kerr sticking with the lineup, I guess.
He said after the game that this was the best 2-way game that the team has played all season. You can't really deny that.
No, you can't.
I wonder, you know, I ask you this. I wonder if it's chemistry that the starters played a lot better tonight. Was it just the Spurs missing shots, or was it just the Warriors making shots? Like, I'm curious which one is more, and I think that would tell you maybe moving forward what's more sustainable, right? Because if it's chemistry, it's probably the most sustainable.
So I think it's a little bit of each. Obviously, look, you're not playing a team who's going 4 of 33 from 3 every night. Like, that's just the reality. I actually don't know that the Warriors played that great of defense tonight. I thought they were active. I think the Spurs missed some easy looks too. You know, on another night, a team might go 9 of 33 or 10 of 33, which is still not good. But that change, you know, 6 made threes would be a big deal for the Spurs, right? It would change everything, right? So I think that's part of it. But beyond that, like, if the Warriors are going to play with this kind of energy, that's the biggest thing for me. I'm mostly curious to see what happens when they play with this kind of energy against a team who's hitting tough shots. You know, Spurs are probably not talented enough to be that team, but maybe the Clippers are, maybe the Nuggets are, these teams that they've played in the past. Like, you could see the Warriors playing with this energy level and the Denver Nuggets hitting shots. And that's kind of the type of, that's a separation of a great defense, in my opinion. Like, you know, at some point you'll play a dude who hits bad shots in your face, and does it break your spirit, or do you still stay locked in the whole way? Those are the type of things that, like, I mean, you know, we just can't really get to until we start seeing it, right?
Yeah, that's tough. It's a great point. And I don't think they're there. I don't think they'll get there. It's just that requires James Wiseman to be a lot better than he is defensively. That requires Andrew Wiggins. By the way, I wanted to mention this too. Andrew Wiggins looked like he was hurt tonight. He looks like he was hobbling a little bit. He's obviously he's hurt. He should probably not play tomorrow and just rest until the game against Utah this weekend. I don't know if they need him to beat the Knicks here.
The Knicks have been good, but yes.
Your Julius Randle, King Randle, King Julius.
But your point stands. The Knicks also just don't have a lot on the wings. So it's like, it is especially a game you could probably get away with him missing.
But to me, I think it's just, he played 31 minutes. He's plus 27, good on defense, made a bunch of threes, got to the hole. Like his get to the hole and pass game. And then the post game little flip shot, half hook push shot kind of thing is just money right now. And I think it's, man, the guy is tough, right? Like, I think a lot of the criticism with Andrew Wiggins is that, like, he doesn't care. He's kind of soft. He kind of floats. But so far this season, so far in his Warriors tenure, Sam, like, it's been super cool to see him be genuinely, like, it looks like he's having
fun. He's super likable, and I think the fan base is starting to really warm up to him. Yes. I think what's interesting is he's shy. Like, you watch his interviews, and you're like, this guy really doesn't want to talk to anyone at all. And it makes you wonder, you know, it gives the impression that he doesn't care. But like, all I'm seeing is like, I don't know that he's a leader per se. I think he's a guy who works really hard and works with other players well. And that's good. You know, like he might be the perfect guy to play with Steph and Draymond because he's willing to follow their lead, so to say.
Yep. I think that's just Wiggins to a T, right? That's the stuff you hear in Minnesota. And I think it would have been an even better fit if there was Klay Thompson. And obviously he's not playing, but like, it's like, you can see he's just easy. He's not like he's Harry B. Like, they're similar in some ways, but Harry B would just float through games where he would literally not look for a shot and just disappear. I think Wiggins, like, sometimes does the same things, but if you get him the ball, like, he's playing the way that he's going to play no matter what. I think that bodes maybe worse when you're in a high leverage game, but again, he's not a superstar. So I think that's it's a cool part of Wiggins. That's nice to see. I think he's gotten I fucking called him soft many times, but it's cool to see him play like this.
And I do want to say, maybe this is the difference between, he's 25. He'll be 26 in the next month and a half or so. I know it's coming up. When Harry B was on the Warriors, he was like 22. And, you know, we've watched Harrison in Sacramento. He's gotten a lot better. I think he's actually been really good for them, honestly.
This season, yeah.
And I think in some ways I don't want to say if I feel bad for like critiques of Harrison Barnes, but like, he was a victim of being too young to be on that Warrior team, right? Like, everyone else was ready to compete, and he was like a year or two away from being that guy, right? Wiggins, I mean, he's still young, he's still figuring out, but like, he's just a little more evolved than Harrison Barnes was when Harrison Barnes was on the Warriors in 2015, right? And in some ways the timeline hits. Like, you know how we've been seeing in the Discord chat, guys are like, are they going to trade the pick? Are they going to trade Wiseman for win now help? And I don't know how you feel, but like, I kind of feel like I'm not really interested in trading Wiseman unless you're netting, you know, a top 15 player, right? Like, I'm not trading Wiseman just to get a, you know, Andre Drummond or something like that, right?
Go ahead.
And I was going to say, that's kind of the catch 22 of timelines when you know, Steph Curry is still good enough to be the best player on a title team. And you often want to surround him with players who can help you now. And the Warriors are ultimately in this weird spot where it's like, they can compete now, but they also have these pieces they want to keep for the future. And it's just, I know other teams really trying to do that, to be honest. Like, Brooklyn traded everything to go all in on, you know, just the bucket getting all-star team. And then, like, you know, like, I obviously, like, LeBron, you know, shipped out Lonzo and Ingram and all those dudes. And that's kind of like how the NBA is going. No one's really doing what the Warriors are doing.
I think that's a final best way to put it, is that there's nobody that's trying to do what the Warriors are trying to do. And if they do it right, this thing's got a long shelf life on it. So Yeah, one more.
I do. I want to end with, well, this before we get to the break. Okay, so yeah, right. The Warriors are 8-6. They have 6 games before the end of the month. Okay.
Yep.
Knicks, Jazz.
Yep.
Timberwolves twice at Phoenix, Detroit. What would you think? So 6 games left, 2 teams in there on the road who are probably going to be, no, actually they'll definitely be, Utah and Phoenix will be favored against them.
Yep.
And 4 teams at home that they should be favored.
Yep.
What would you consider a good return from those 6 games ending January?
Yeah. I mean, they better be 4-2. It better be 4-2. I think they, you know, I don't think they're as good as Utah right now. I think Utah's not as good as Denver, just offensively. I think that's why the Warriors just couldn't keep up. I think some of that was the altitude stuff. I think, Sam, they should be able to win one of the games against Phoenix or Utah. If I had to pick one, it would probably be Phoenix. Phoenix is fine. They've been somewhat impressive. They're kind of hard to watch, though, a little bit.
Very, very Chris Paul, where you like, you respect it, but you're like, I don't know if I'm enjoying what I'm watching.
Yeah, that's how I feel with the Lakers too. But it's like, I don't know how good they are yet. And so I want to see that. If I had to pick a game that I think the Warriors would win of those two, would probably be that one, just cause we don't know, right? I know what Utah is, and I think Utah is still better than the Warriors today. So 5-1 would be great, but they better be 4-2. You can't lose to Detroit or the Minnesota and then New York tomorrow.
And honestly, both those games will be fun because like Gobert might be the only center Wiseman faces who's bigger than him. So that'll just be interesting. And then I'm not a DeAndre Ayton guy, but that's also going to be an interesting test for Wiseman from that perspective. And yep. then goes without saying, Steph versus CP is always fun.
Always.
So, and then, you know, Kelly Oubre is going to be back in Phoenix blowing revenge kisses at all his game. Ladies. So,
yeah, Kelly Oubre enjoying Scottsdale, enjoying O-Town.
Yeah. So, if they go 4-2, they would be 12-8 at the end of January. And I think that adds up to 20 games. What he needs to be, honestly, though. But like, if they're 12-8 through 20 games, I don't think either you or I thought that was where they're
going.
So you can't really complain about that. That's good.
Yeah, I saw more of like an 8-12, 10-10, maybe. You know, like the first 20 games.
I was like, hang at 500.
Yeah,
until you figure it out.
Yeah, so 12-8, and I think at this point you're almost expecting 12-8 because losing those 4 games, unless Steph's not playing, honestly. Like if Steph's not playing, then they have a shot to lose any of those games. But if Steph's playing in all of those games, you should be 4-2. So no, they got a nice road ahead of them, Sam. I think they've gotten through some of the larger rough patches so far. And we haven't talked about Oubre.
Couple impressive wins.
And I think like it'd be nice to see Oubre kind of keep getting it going, right? Like 2-for-4 from 3 tonight. If he can keep getting it going and actually being able to shoot and keep it defensively, like this is a fun regular season team that could make some noise. Come game 40, maybe. Maybe they'll even be better game 40, Steve. Who knows? According to Steve, yeah.
Nah, I mean, it's a good spot. Should we do some draft talk when we get the Wolves games next week?
Should we
just really rub it in the Wolves' faces? Or just like, you know what? We don't even talk about these games. We're talking about Jalen's only tonight.
I did see she just retweeted a Jalen Johnson to the Warriors mock draft. So, yeah, we'll get someone on come the Minnesota game so we can talk about who the Warriors are going to get on top of James Wiseman and Andrew Wiggins looking like the next version, looking like a better version of Harry B. So. All right, guys. I hope you are all sitting down because we have something to tell you. We have to tell you something monumental. We love sports betting. Yeah, I saw Sam actually betting the live action in the second, third, and fourth quarter like a sick fuck. And whether you've been betting for a while or you've been thinking about getting started, we want to let you know about a great resource for sports bettors, the Action Network. The Action Network is where sports fans go bet smarter and experience real financial gains. In fact, their Action Network app was recently named the best app in sports betting. And with an Action Network Pro subscription, you can unlock the very best of the app. So when you sign up for a Pro subscription, You can access the Pro Report, which includes expert projections for every game. You can see money and bet.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Percentages of every game. And you can see the teams professional gamblers are betting on. Ooh. You can take advantage of pro systems, which match winning historical betting trends with the latest games and lines. And you can track every bet you make and get alerts in real time. So if you're looking to bet smarter, Action Network Pro subscription is the best way to get started. And for a limited time, our listeners can receive 50% off an annual pro subscription. Just go to actionnetwork.com now. Receive 50% off an annual subscription when you use the code LIGHTYEARS. This offer won't last, so go to the actionnetwork.com to sign up for a pro subscription and use promo code LIGHTYEARS to receive 50% off and start betting smarter today.
Look, no one's perfect. Even the best baseball players strike out with the bases loaded. The best golfers sometimes three-putt with the tournament on the line. So if you feel like you're coming up short in the bedroom sometimes, it's perfectly okay. But if it's bothering you, there are options. Go to Roman.com/lightyears now. With Roman, you can get a free online evaluation and ongoing care for ED, all from the comfort and privacy of your home. A U.S. licensed healthcare professional will work with you to find the best treatment plan. If medication is appropriate, it ships to you free with two-day shipping. The whole process is straightforward and discreet. Getting started is simple. Just go to getroman.com/lightyears and complete an online visit. Take care of your ED without leaving your home. Complete an online visit today to connect with a doctor and take care of it. Go to getroman.com/lightyears and get $15 off your first month. Look, there's a straightforward way to take care of your ED. Getroman.com/lightyears. Get started now to save $15 off your first month of treatment.
And we are back. Hope you all registered with the Action Network. You know, just we're giving you the winners here. So
wow, an ad shout out right at the jump, Sam, like a pro. Amazing.
So, 5 stars, subscribe, 5 stars, you know, so Light Years Premium, all the fun stuff, you know.
Yeah. So Steve Kerr said something yesterday. If we get Tim to insert it right here.
The team is learning on the fly. And, you know, I'll be, you know, very honest. If I had to win a game tomorrow, I wouldn't start that group. If this was a one-time thing, I would start a different group and probably, you know, go to some different combinations. But this is the team that I want to see develop a really good defensive identity. And James needs to be out there. Kelly and Andrew need to be together on the wings, guarding, you know, LeBron and Kawhi and Paul George and all those guys. So it's going to take some time. And in the meantime, there's going to be some growing pains, but I'm okay with it because for us to be great down the road, whether it's by the end of this year or even next season, James has to develop and Kelly and Andrew have to get comfortable. And so I'm willing to, you know, to sacrifice some things here early in the season to try to get to where we want to go later on.
So that's Steve Kerr. First off, I want to say I'm glad at least Steve Kerr acknowledges the starting lineup doesn't work because I thought I was going insane with that. But it's very clear he's not, he has a larger purpose here. So what are your thoughts?
Do you think he walks into every room? You know, you've worked with corporate environments. You know, there's always one asshole that walks into every meeting like 5 minutes late while everyone started and talking and going through a prezzo. Then he walks in, he sits down, and he just immediately, you just know he's a dick. And you just know he thinks he's the smartest guy there. And sometimes he's right. Most of the times he's right. And it's infuriating. To me, that guy, Sam, that's Steve Kerr.
Yeah, but I don't think he's right. So
okay, so let's argue.
What he's right about is the goal is to have your team peaking in the playoffs, right? Mm-hmm. Like this isn't this isn't 2018 where you're running back a group that's played together for, you know, 6 years in a row and, you know, all you're really concerned about is like health, right? This is a new group, so there's questions about how you get them peaking at the same time. What I'm confused about is how being so stringent with this starting lineup is doing that. Because to me, and he had another quote where he said, we want to make the playoffs this year and see what happens and then really contend next year. If your goal is to contend, if your goal is to contend next year, which basically means you don't think you can compete for anything special this year, which to be fair, Clay went down. We all kind of acknowledge like that kind of screws you, right? Wouldn't you maybe want to start Damian Lee because he's like the closest thing you have to at least mirroring what Clay Thompson would do? Like if your goal is to get James Wiseman to be a better player and get comfortable with playing the way the Warriors want, don't you want that?
Okay, so there's a couple different things Steve Kerr is juggling here. Number one is the front office and Kelly Oubre's contract. So that's number one. That's, I think, the most obvious one. I think it's hard. Like, you can, and I think they should. We talked about this ad nauseum. But $14 million contract, $80 million in taxes. It's hard to bench that for Damian Lee. Okay, so that's number one. Number two, I think that he's also like the guy thinks he's Phil Jackson and Greg Popovich combined. I think there's a bit of I would rather be right about me versus anything else in the world. And I think he's been right a lot in his career. You can argue whether, like, I think with Houston is the best example. He's always said James Harden's gonna, like, behind the scenes and in front of the scenes, James Harden's gonna wear down. Chris Paul's gonna wear down. Those guys aren't real shooters. We play the way that we play. We're gonna beat them in the long series. Sam, they've beat them in long series every single time, 7 games and 6 games, right? You can argue whether if they just run pick and run, they win it in 4 or 5. That's fine. I think that's fair, but they've won. So I think you can say that he's right there. And I also think that, I think that he's better at ego management than he is at actual schematics from an X's and O's level. And I think this is like a peak peak Steve Kerr in terms of how he's playing to the media. And I think what you're saying with him, you know, we're going to contend next season. Then why are we starting Kelly Oubre? I don't believe he believes that they're waiting for next season to contend. I think he's doing this because he actually thinks they might be able to win a series or two and to get the Western Conference Finals. That's why he's doing this. But in order to set the expectations and not have people quote him and say, oh, you know, we think we might actually be able to play the Lakers in the Western Conference Finals. I think there's a part of that with how he's playing the media. So I think he's juggling all that at once. I'm not saying any of it is right, but I think that's how Steve Kerr has always done it, though.
I think your points are fair. And you know, I'd probably agree with you. That's like kind of my read too. My question, so let's get to the Kelly Oubre thing. Okay. So he clearly, like, I think we're all in agreement. Like, it's not that like Oubre doesn't fit or Wiseman doesn't fit or even Wiggins doesn't fit. It's like putting them all together is like, you've created this, like, literally somehow you've created a lineup with no spacing next to Steph Curry, right? Like it's like more of the whole thing. Like we saw Oubre play backup power forward versus the Lakers. And all of a sudden he looked like a new man. He looked productive in that role. Right. What I keep coming back to is like, it's pretty clear to me, Steve's thinking defense first. He's thinking Oubre's long, Oubre's athletic. And my priority is to try to get a defensive unit together, and offense and Steph be damned, my system will work, right? That's the way I read it. And I'm sitting here going, I just don't know if that'll ever come around. I just don't know that Oubre's a two guard, yeah. that this yeah. lineup will work in this capacity. So if he's starting Oubre because he doesn't want to destroy his confidence, I can support that because that's important. But if he's starting it because he thinks, you know, in game 17 or 18, there, you know, something different's going to come, then I have to question, you know, what year he's in, really.
Yeah, he's got a little goink vibe to him right now in the NBA. I agree. I think that he's trying to emulate pieces of what the Warriors have been successful with, and if he right. were to pick a piece, he's not picking the guy that's closest to Klay Thompson. He's picking the guy that's closest to Andrew. Why did I say Andrew Wiggins? He's picking the guy closest to Andre Iguodala, Kevin Durant, Klay Thompson on defense, Sean Livingston, and like I think, do you know how excited Steve Kerr gets when he sees Andrew Wiggins like a weak side help block? Like I think he's happier about those plays than he is about Steph Curry making a three. Like there is no doubt in my mind that that makes him more excited, and I think that's what he truthfully believes, and that. He's also has this big man fetish where he thinks that if you have a big man, that automatically means your defenses should be better than without a traditional big man.
Just size and athleticism.
Yeah.
It's like, honestly, like he's,
yeah.
I mean, he's super hyped on having Wiggins and Oubre who have like prototypical wing size and athleticism, right? Like they're not Kawhi and PG, but they're built like them, right? Like there's like a fit similar physical, like he's more yes. excited to try yes. to coach that. Than to deal with the fact that the best player he has, and quite frankly, he's ever coached, has the same physical build as him, really. You know, like that's what it really comes down to on some level. It's like, to me, I worry that he's going to inevitably start frustrating Steph. Like Steph is a very patient man. I think Steph wants to retire a Warrior. He's been here forever. And I have no reason to think he's going to finally be like, I'm fed up with being treated this way, but it feels like a dangerous game to play. You know, like you did it with KD. You've done it all the time. Like Steph's the consummate good soldier. At a certain point, like this isn't the greatest roster ever assembled. Like maybe learn to optimize your best player and have them follow his lead. Because to me, this team goes as far as Steph and Draymond take them. And that's probably going to be true until they retire. Like even if Wiseman becomes a superstar, they're going to be the leaders of the team, right? At least until they retire. So I feel like you need to, I don't know, maybe it's, you know, it's easy to point to, well, what made the Warriors great was that Steph didn't act like other superstars. But at a certain point, maybe it's better to kind of push him to, right?
Yeah. My pushback on that would only be if Steph made it gave off a whiff of, hey, Steve Kerr should be doing this. I would like to think that Steve Kerr would be doing it.
That's true. That's true.
I think that's the same stuff with like Joel Akob, right? Where Joel Akob was like, hey, do you think Steph is going to take a pay cut? And Steph was like, no. And Joel Akob said, well, okay, then you're going to get the max. And guess what? Steph will get the max again when his contract comes up or something close to that, right? Whatever he wants. So I'm with you. I think if Steph had maybe a mindset of, I was talking to this with a couple buddies. Like, can you imagine if he was like James Harden or Kyrie Irving? I also think Steve Kerr wouldn't coach him this way though. If Steph had shown
that's
to
true,
be
that's
James
true.
Harden and Kyrie, like Steve to me feels like Steve. Like I know the guy. Like we're best friends. I know Sam's texting him all the time. Like Steve to me feels like he understands that he has this great pillar, and that he'd rather work on, you know, the other three. Right, he'd rather work on the other three things or sure. two things to at least sharpen those up so that they can be like it's his well-rounded thing, right? Like he takes that well-rounded thing and puts it like he puts that as a blanket kind of projection on how the Warriors should be
It should be Steph is so great on offense. You know what? Why don't we take a little bit of that offense off because he's so good and make the defense a little bit closer than what it is. And I think that what we're trying to say is your defense is not going to get any better than what it is. Like James Wiseman is not becoming KG and Kelly Oubre and Andrew Wiggins, as cool as fun as they are on defense, are not Clay and Iguodala. So why? Right. And why don't you just, yeah.
And I would just
spear instead.
And I would just say, why aren't we looking to balance it a little more? You know, like I totally get wanting to develop them because ultimately you need them to be productive. You can't just like, I hate Oubre, throw him in the doghouse and like magically KD appears. That's not how it works. Right. Like you need to be productive, but you kind of wonder if they're in the best roles to succeed. And I'm thinking about this from two specific angles. One is Steph Curry. Steph is getting frustrated with these terrible starts and just kind of those lineups.
Yes,
like he's doing most of his damage through the flow of the game in different lineup combinations, to be honest. But the second one is Wiseman. If you really want to develop Wiseman, wouldn't you want to put a little more shooting around him? Wouldn't you want maybe Damian Lee instead of Oubre? Maybe have Oubre come in when Wiggins or Draymond hit the bench. Try some different things just to try to get more out of them. I don't know. I get it. Again, getting back to the initial quote, I get it conceptually. I'm just not sure I buy that it's the best way to do it.
The Philadelphia Sixers are a great example, I think, of what happens when you put the right pieces around a big man. I'm not saying that James Wiseman, a buddy of mine, was arguing to me today that he sees a lot of Joel Embiid and James Wiseman. I was like, stop it. I was like, absolutely, please stop. But Joel Embiid,
that's a heat check.
Big heat check. But you know, that's Warriors fans, right? Like, I love the passion. But the thing is, Joel Embiid's an MVP front runner right now, Sam. Would you say like top three at least, at the very least?
Yeah, and like probably the most talented center in the league, unless you consider Anthony Davis one. But either way, he is, right?
Yeah. And he had to play around a bunch of, like, I don't know what Elton Brand was doing. Like, he had to play with, like
Horford, Tobias, Andy Lewitt, the shooting guard.
Yeah, right? You know what I mean?
Ben Simmons. Daryl Morey,
Simmons. Yeah, Ben Simmons. But Daryl Morey comes in, and, you know, I think Daryl Morey, one of the best in the biz. And
absolutely.
He didn't do anything crazy. He said, well, you know what? I think I'm going to put some shooting around this guy. You know, give me Seth. Give me
Danny Green,
right? Get Alford away from this team. Have Tobias Harris play the four, right? It's a much better fit. He's a good enough shooter to play the four. You know, get some of these shooters in that make sense around Joel Embiid, and immediately he's unlocked. And I think it's so obvious, and I think that's what Steve Kerr doesn't understand, or refuses to, I should say, because he probably understands it, but he refuses to because that doesn't ascribe to whatever thinking that he has that things should be.
Well, he just clearly prioritizes length and athleticism for defensive reasons to shooting. And, you know, part of me just thinks like, I don't know, they kind of beat the Clippers with Damian Lee and Mulder next to Steph shooting out, you know? And I'm not advocating going pure Nelly ball or just running Steph out of high pick and roll all the time. I'm just saying balance it a little better. And it's something that it's worried me about the Warriors for a couple of years, but they've got away with it just because they had the most talent in the league. Like, you could run whatever system you want when you have Steph, Clay, KD, Iguodala, Draymond, Andy Lou, Zaza, Sean Livingston, you know, like we got like eight all-stars. You're good. But like now, I continually wonder if like the rest of the league has caught up to the Warriors or surpassed them intellectually. And they're just trying to repeat a formula as opposed to continue to adapt around it. And shooting for me is the biggest one. Like, I make this point every day. James Wiseman's not shooting threes. He shot four in like the first game, and a lot of it was in garbage time. He doesn't shoot threes anymore. His ability to hit threes is what's going to make him special as opposed to just a good big man, right? Yeah. Like he doesn't shoot threes. He maxes out as Rudy Gobert. Fine, but not exactly, you know, the greatest return ever for what you're hoping. He's able to shoot threes all of a sudden he's like some sort of Chris Bosh type character. And you're like, that's a guy I need for sure. And it doesn't feel like it's a top priority to develop him that way. And all of this points to a mindset that I'm just, I don't think it's unreasonable to have questions and to wonder. Like saying, look at the rings doesn't mean anything to me. Phil Jackson has 11 rings. Phil Jackson, I don't know that I'd want him coaching a team in 2021. I don't, just like, I wouldn't want to dig up Red Auerbach and have him coach a team either.
Jesus, that was good. That was good. Did not see that coming. I think their top priority is developing James Wiseman. The problem is their problem is how, right? The problem is how are they developing him? Because we've heard that they know that. They know that, you know whose fault it is if James Wiseman doesn't become a star? It's not really James Wiseman. It's the coaching staff. It's the developmental staff. Like, they understand that James Wiseman has all the tools. Great. Maybe he doesn't have the innate ability to be Anthony Davis, but he has the ability to be developed into a very good Bam Adebayo. Like, he has great feel for the game, especially defensively, but he had to be developed into a great, like the great, like Draymond Green-esque type of player today that he is. And I think that's James, like that's James Wiseman, who doesn't have the same amount of feel, but the talent, not even the talent, the freaking athleticism is good enough for him to be a Rudy Gobert with a jump shot, which is, I mean, my God, that's already one of the more valuable players in the freaking NBA. So it's up to them, right? And you're saying they know that. They know that that's the most important thing. They're just doing it wrong, at least in your opinion.
Maybe. I mean, and maybe he starts shooting threes in 10 games and maybe it comes around. It's just, but it's something that's very important to me to see them do, because his value is almost exclusively tied to his ability to shoot from the outside. If you're a big man, there's like the most important thing is being able to defend in space. I think he'll eventually be able to do it. It may take him a while, but I think he'll eventually be able to do something. You know, I'm not saying he's going to be AD, but I think he can at least, he's too athletic and he's too long to not have some value in space, even if it's like letting guys beat him and then blocking him from behind, you know?
Yeah.
That sort of thing. Yeah. But the jump shot is probably more important to his offense than anything. I think he's going to be fine being a rim runner, but he needs to be able to shoot the ball. It's 2021. Well, that's like the most important thing. And, you know, whether it happens now or in 9 months, like it doesn't matter. But I just keep in mind, this is the coach who, you know, got on Draymond for shooting when Draymond was shooting 40% from three. And now Draymond can't shoot. You know, it feels like, have we ever seen this coaching staff develop a shooter? I'm just like, honestly, like they didn't develop Steph or Clay shooting. That's for sure. They didn't develop KD shooting. They also, you know, sometimes you have a guy who can just shoot before you get there, right? But it's like, have they really developed shooters?
They didn't develop Justinian Jessup shooting. That kid can fucking shoot. I ain't going to give him that one either. I think with Wiseman, I think maybe we're disagreeing a little bit today. I like it. It's good. Good content. I would rather see him roll more to the rim and take a dribble when he gets the ball to go to the rim. The problem is, number one, he's not catching the freaking ball. Yes. And then number two, which
also feels like a spacing issue, which gets back to my shooting point.
Well, no, like some of the stuff where he's just not catching the ball right in front of him. Like, dude, he's wide open. He's just not catching it. Or he's getting the ball and he's bringing it down and getting it stripped, or he can't get a rebound. Like, to me, it's like, dude, you just can't catch the damn ball. Like, that's what we do there. Right. And then the second one is go to the fucking rim, like take a dribble and go to the damn, like, when we watch Giannis first coming into the league, he used to take one step into the three from the half court and dunk. And that was Giannis, right? Not saying Wiseman is Giannis, but Wiseman has the ability to just take one dribble from the free throw line, one step, and go up for a layup or a dunk. And I don't see that enough. And that may be spacing. That may be not having Damian Lee in there, right? But there have been many times where I see him take a 12-footer when I'm just like, bro, you're a 50% free throw shooter. You're not making this mid-range shot at a clip that matters. Take a dribble and go into the damn hole. Like, that pause again. But like, it's very simple basketball, man. And I don't.
Good for a pause that. Every episode.
I don't see that anyway. I don't see that enough. I don't know why we're doing the James Wiseman bashing today. Let's pivot. Where are we going next?
Yeah. And I don't even want to, you know, like this wasn't even meant to be a bashing session. It's just like, I don't think these are unfair questions to ask. And the last thing is, I don't think it's unfair for like fans on Twitter to bring up like their thoughts either. Like the biggest thing I'm seeing, and it's like an overarching thing, but it really kind of bothers me, is like traditional media just constantly like taking pot shots at fans on Twitter. Like, what are we doing here? What is the point of that? Like, none of this works without people consuming the product. So certain fans are irrational. Who cares? So certain people think that, you know, James Wiseman shouldn't be playing. So certain people don't like that they're not starting Damian Lee. Why are we taking shots at fans? What are we doing here? It's so small-minded.
Yeah, I my general take always is, I just like passion. I just like people that are genuinely passionate about basketball. And if they're pissed, great. If they're happy, great. Right? Like my thing is, like, if you're depressed after watching Warriors game, first of all, like, relax a little bit. But like, that's good. That's good for, like, that's what sports fans are, right? Like, you grow up and you watch the Warriors, or you watch the Niners, you watch the Giants. If you're down bad, you're Sam, you watch the A's, and like, you watch a lot of L's, like, you know what I mean? So, but like, I'm with you, Sam. Like, I'm with you. I always enjoy when people are passionate about things, because that's all that matters. Whether you're right or you're wrong, like, whether you are right, or that in itself does not matter, because it's sports. It doesn't matter who, there's no right or who's wrong. You know what I mean? It's just, you gotta be passionate about it. That's all that matters. So I'm with you. I think this points to another issue that is an extension of players and teams themselves, and even the NBA at large, is that they just care too much about what a very small minority of people have to say.
Right
on Twitter and wherever. And I think that speaks to majority of it, because like, I was on the pod with Hugh Tomasello yesterday, and I told him, like, do you know how many people of Warriors fans really know what Steph Better is? Like, these listeners probably do, but like, outside of that, out of like all Warriors fans, Sam, like, I would say like maybe 5% or less know what that means.
You're not giving yourself enough credit. It's
no, but you
it's
get
my 10.
But my point is like most fans, they don't know, because they're not on freaking Twitter. And even if they're on Twitter, they're not following every tweet I've sent for the last 7 years, man. And so I think like the evolution is amazing. So I think that speaks to the point that we always make, is that there's like, you know, the crazies. Enjoy the crazies, but that's also not the fucking majority of Warriors fans.
Yeah, and that's just where I'm at with it too. Like, why you just, so people disagree with you, so what? So, you know, so what? So it is what it is. Anyway, yeah, they're not changing the starting lineup. They're going to keep going with this, and we will be back whenever we are.